I'm going to call this meeting to order of the Expanded Budget Committee 2010. Put the paper down, Mike. I noticed there are enough of us here to begin with this, and we will do that. Let me just start off by saying welcome to the future. And we have, and if you, that's a reference to the budget that we have and the budget that we don't have, and the potential budget that may come at us after the state legislature gets back together, if in fact they do that. So there are a couple things I wanted to mention, and then I would hand it off to Joe. If you look at the schedule, it says 5 o'clock, 45 minutes, county budget, county administration budget. We're talking about a $73 million budget. We came in here with a 3% tax levy. The administration did their very best to get that. By dealing with the department heads over the summer and ruined everyone's life while they were doing that. So we have a responsibility. We end up with that levy, and those of us who are here will have to figure out what we're going to do with that. Let me just throw out a number. 1% increase in levy means $370,000. For every 1%, that's what you're adding to the budget. And Joe, I'm sure, will run through all these things, but we get our money from sales tax, property tax, fees, and there clearly is something we have an unfinished business we have to deal with, a potential mortgage tax increase, if in fact we're going to be able to fund all the things that we want to do. And you all know the reasons why we're in the situation we're in: pensions, loss of sales tax, loss of state revenue, recognizing completely that we have people in this community. The job rate is as high, job loss rate is as high as I've ever seen it, and we have to be open to the kind of problems that exist in Tompkins County at this time. So unless anyone has any specific questions for me, Let me just mention one other thing. There's some pizza out there, and I tried to get four different kinds so that it would satisfy everyone's needs. And if we're going to have these meetings and end up doing things, wanting to eat, then I think my sense is that all of us are going to have to kick in some money to make that happen. I'm not willing to ask the legislature to fund our food. We should do it ourselves. And the way we can eliminate all that is we'll have four or five meetings and adopt a tentative budget and save yourself a lot of money and spend October with your friends and family.
Well, go on
so at
a
this
diet.
Point, I'm sorry, David. I want to give you the County Administrator, Joe Marion, to do the work, and Norma, of course.
Thank you. Thank you, Jim. I'm going to be very brief and then turn it over to Norma. Just to say a couple of things and kind of to get us started. First, thank you in advance for the time you're going to spend on this budget. I know the budget we've given you is not going to be easy for you to get through and look through some of the very difficult decisions that are woven into the budget, and I appreciate the fact that you set up a process that will allow that to happen in a very civil, reasoned way, and I appreciate your involvement in that. Second, just with respect to structure, this will be a little different this year in that each department will, I think, be presenting a brief presentation of their budget. We have offered them a template to use if they choose. It has certain common elements in it, like a brief history of their roster, their FTEs, a five-year history of expenditures, some very top-line budget numbers, along with some bullets on impact and so forth. So that was a suggested template. Some will use it. Some will choose to just incorporate it in their outline. Some will not use it, and I'd ask you just to be okay with all of those options, because we want to make sure that every department is comfortable in the way they present their information. And we've encouraged them to do that in a way that gets their point across, but in a very concise manner. So that'll be a part of the approach this year. I think I'm at this point going to turn it over to Norma You will find in the next half hour or so what you already know, that the brains behind this budget is really Norma Jane, and she's done an excellent job with that, with the budget. She will be walking you through kind of the next level of detail. I gave you very high-level stuff at the legislative session. We're going to drill down to the next level of detail in the presentation this evening to go through some of the more critical elements of this budget. And I'm going to ask Norma to do that. So with that, I'll turn it over to Norma.
Just want to make sure that, can you hear me okay? Because I don't know whether I have to get this thing closer. On your desks, you should have a few pieces of paper, big surprise. You'll have a mandated report, a schedule with page numbers for both the OTRs and the line item budget, and a time frame for each department. You have a new OTR summary, which should replace the gray packet, the over-target request summary. There's a gray report that's already in your budget books. The one that's on your desk should replace that. It's just it's the same information. It's just laid out a little better, I think. Gives you lines to show what's supported by department's rollover. You should also have three documents from departments: public health, weights and measures, and the rural libraries submitted information early. Those should be on your desks at this point.
Just to be clear, so Norma, you're saying the pages that look like this?
That's right, are being replaced by the ones that are
that
the other
look like that?
Yes.
Thank you.
The numbers are the same. It's just a better layout. I think you'll appreciate it more. Which is a little housekeeping. All right, I'm going to just walk through what's in the books that are on your desk right now. You have four sections. I'll wait till. The over-target requests are the first. The OTR tab is the first tab in your book. I should have stopped. You have a summary or a budget message from the county administrator at the top of your packet and a schedule. And then the next tab will be the OTR tab. In that has the new budget summary. I just want to point out that on this summary, there's the OTR number, the over-target request number. And next to it in parentheses is page number. That page number refers to the big book. So if you're looking for the full budget for that particular over-target request, you can turn to that page within the big book. Okay? Okay. This also shows if rollover is being used, what was happening in the other summary. When rollover is being used and it's one-time funding, it looks like there's no money going into that budget. So showing rollover, which is the money that departments didn't spend in the previous year, and one-time funds are showing separately so that you can clearly see what's being both requested and recommended in the tentative budget. The tan pages are just the same information, but gives you all the narrative that departments sent us. All right, so the next tab is the general revenue and other summaries. We'll go through that in some detail. Those are numbered page 1 through 4. There's a list of what's the unallocated revenues on page 2 of this section. Well, I'll come back and we'll go through the general revenue summary. I just want to make sure everybody's got all their pages and there's not a problem. There's a general fund statement of fund balances on page 3, and page 4 shows all of the funds fund balance. Okay? And there's a rollover tab. Again, I just want to make sure that everyone understands rollover is this is the money that is not spent in the previous year. It's carried forward so that the departments, through their savings, are able to spend it in subsequent years. So they can either spend it in the next So if they've got money left over in 2008, they can spend it either in 2009 or hold it to spend it on other items in their budget in later years. And then you have tabs for each of the standing committees, and we'll go over those in a few minutes. If we can go back to the first page, to the general revenue summary, I'll go through that with you. Line one is mandated services.
Where are we?
I'm sorry, back on the general revenue set. Page one of the salmon sheets. Okay. Line one, I'm talking just in the 2010 tentative column, so that's the far right column, our mandated services. You see this is asterisked. It includes the mandated services without the Medicaid assistance. So without, we have a reduced cost for Medicaid this year due to the federal assistance. So this number looks pretty flat to 2009 because of that. But really, if we didn't have that money coming from the federal government on that one-time basis, it would be more like a $20 million mandated cost.
The breakdown of that on this page you gave us, right?
Right, that's correct.
Okay.
Mark?
Over $20 million, that would only...
It'd be $1 million higher.
Be $1 million because this is 19.8.
Right.
It
would be about 20.8, a little bit more.
That extra million. Okay.
Line two. Those are all the other mandated services. The local share of all the other non-mandated services. Line three shows the over-target requests. That's the total non-capital over-target requests. So anything that's not covered within the department's target is called an over-target request. The capital OTRs is line number four. Those are the items within the capital budget that are discretionary. We can choose to either fund or not fund those. Line five, those are the surplus funds being used by departments to offset one-time expenses. Well, actually, in this case, you'll see this year they're using it for both ongoing expenses and one-time expenses, but a lot of rollover has been turned back into the general fund. The contingent funds is line six. Self-insurance fund is line seven, and we will be going into some more detail in some of these lines. And line eight is the capital debt service. This is what we're required to pay our debt for 2010. So our total local share is $73,123,424.
Is there any reason that we shouldn't think about the debt service as our own mandate? I think of it that way.
We have to pay that bill.
Yeah.
It may not be a Class A mandate, but it is. We do have to pay it.
The number you just gave is 73.
That's line nine.
Line nine.
Mm-hmm. On the capital programs, the page numbers on the gray sheets, do the page numbers coincide with what part of the budget book?
It would be the
under
budget and capital. That's correct.
Okay. Just quickly, on the salmon sheet, the capital OTRs on line 4 are 850, the tentative 2010, 853,098. The capital program OTR total on the gray sheets doesn't add up to that.
It's less. Yeah. Because, we'll get onto the revenues. We're using $222,000 of fund balance to reduce the tax levy in 2010, of debt service fund balance.
Does that shift show someplace in these sheets?
It does show up in the over targets, yeah, and in the but light item budget. You'll see line 11 is the sales tax revenue. This is 3.7% increase over what we expect to actually receive in 2009, not what was budgeted. So we're budgeting about $28 million for 2010. And the other general revenues are $4.3 million. Property tax levy is increased by 3% over 2009 at $37.9 million. Line 14 shows how much we're using of general fund balance. Not all of this is target reduction. Some of this is for one-time expenses, but we're spending $1.9 million of fund balance in the tentative budget. Line 16 is the solid waste fund appropriation, so that's the portion of the solid waste fund that they're using to cover their budget expenses for 2010. Line 17, which says other fund appropriations, that's the debt service fund balance of $222.50.
How does the rollover appropriation explain that again?
That's the amount that departments are using toward the 2010 budget. Okay. You'll see it on in both sections, expenditures and revenues, because it's actually an expense that they're offsetting with that surplus fund. Okay. Line 19, the assessed value increased by 2.95% this year. 0.3% of that is due to AES Cayuga, the increase in that value. New lumber represents 1.1%, and the equalization rate is 1.55% increase. So values went up by 1.55, property value, and new lumber, new construction is 1.1% of that.
How much was AES?
0.3.
The total was 2.95.
2.95, yeah. And I'll give you a copy of this PowerPoint, too, if anybody who wants a copy of this. Line 20 is the tax levy change, 3%, as was directed to the county administrator. 21 is the tax rate per thousand. It's $5.94, or 0.1% tax rate change is line 22. It would represent on a $100,000 home, 34-cent increase. Lines 24 through 26 is a breakdown of we had $1.5 million in certified rollover between what was either certified in 2009 or carried forward from 2008 to use in 2009 or 2010. The balance was $1.5 million. Mid-year, departments spent $377,000 on line 24. Line 25, they've used $428,000. And on line 26, we had $292,000 returned to the general fund during the year. So there's still a balance of $425,663 in the rollover, in departments' rollovers. And that's, you can see the breakdown of that in the rollover tab, rollover summary tab. On line 27, going to the fund balance allocation, we have a total fund balance of $12.2 million. Sorry, I'm switching on you here. On page 3 of the salmon sheets, you'll see it's about $12.2 million. Of that, we have a target fund balance of $6.4 million. You'll see the following lines we've put. We then have to reduce from that fund balance how much is being used for multi-year funding. Those multi-year funding is our decisions that were made in previous years to fund for either 2 or 3 years a new initiative or program expense within a department. The mid-year rollover appropriations, that was what was spent in the current year. The rollover being used in this budget is also has to be reduced from that fund balance. We have money sitting in the balance in departments, 425,663. We also have to take that into account. And the general fund rollover returned. So we have $3.8 million in funds available to use for budget appropriations. We're using $1,050,000 in funds to reduce the tax levy. That's served as a placeholder in anticipation of mortgage tax, increasing the mortgage tax by 0.25. It also, we're using $861,000 in the current year for one-time expenses. So the total applied to this year's budget is 1.9, leaving us 1.9 million in anticipated surplus funds for 2010.
Mm-hmm. Before you change your screen, the target fund balance, the writing under that line, could you say a little bit more what that says, please?
Yeah.
5% of expenditures, what is in parentheses?
It's what's in the general fund expense minus any inner fund. So any money that crosses from the general fund to any other fund like the highway fund or the solid waste fund is removed from the total cost, and then that's multiplied by 5% to come up with a target fund balance.
So we don't include other fund balances in the target fund balance?
That's correct. We don't include any other funds balances within the general fund target fund balance. They have their own fund balances.
Some of them do. They don't all have targets, do they?
They do, and that's on page 4 of those 7 sheets that shows the breakdown for that.
Norma? I'm sure I ask this question every year. I'm going to ask again. 27A doesn't have anything to do with the 12.2 million, or does it?
It does. That's what's left after we set aside the target fund balance and all of the other commitments that the legislature has made to spend that money.
So this is the leftover.
That's what's left over. That's right.
And that amount is being reduced by 1,050,000 for tax levy.
Reduction.
Mm-hmm.
That's correct.
And nothing else.
And 861,000 is being used for one time.
Where is that?
That's
27.
Oh, line 27. Got you.
Okay.
For one-time things.
That's right.
Okay. Thank you.
You're welcome.
Norma.
Mm-hmm. Thank you for asking the question every year.
I'll ask it again next year.
That 1,050,000, I understand funds allocated from the fund balance to reduce the tax levy. What I don't understand is when you said in anticipation of the mortgage recording tax increase, mm-hmm. I know we're expecting to pass that. Are you saying, do we expect that to come in at all this year?
In 2010?
2010, yeah.
We would hope for it to come. I think practically, we probably won't get a full year's worth of this tax. So whatever we can't replenish with new revenue would have to be applied reserves. So what this is saying is, in the worst case, if we got nothing, we've left $1,050,000 in there in reserves. But hopefully, if we can move quickly enough and get the state to pay attention to it, and some, hopefully much of this, would be replenished with state revenue.
So this is your estimate of what we would receive from that tax?
It's probably $50,000 higher than what my expectation would be. I've been planning on between $900,000 and $1 million. So let's say it's $1 million. So this is really a conscious decision to put $50,000 of reserves into play to reduce property taxes and a placeholder for the mortgage tax. And it's really kind of a safety valve. If we don't get that tax, we have these reserves and we would apply them.
Okay. So I think I've gone over the fund balance allocation. The just line 34 through 36B are all the one-time expenditures. So 34 are the non-capital expenses. 35 are the capital one-time expenses. And 36 is the use of rollover. And then in lines 38 through 40, those are the targets. And I'm going to go into some detail, and I just realized I have 15 minutes to get through the rest of this. So the target increase for non-capital expenses for the county, when the county administrator made a change in the budget, he looked for an offsetting reduction because of the constraints that we were under to build this budget. So you'll see that there was a negative $1,500 in target increases for the non-capital expenses, and there's a $201,000 increase for capital, which is primarily offset by the debt service fund balance. So our total over target requests are about $1 million in 2010 in the tentative budget. And like I said, the next tab is the rollover report, and this just gives you a history of where the rollover is being generated and where it's being, when it's being used. So I'm going to go through the next few tabs, just kind of giving you an overview of the changes that we've seen in the budget. The departments are going to go into a lot more detail than we're able to do. You'll see on the screen that there's the in budget finance, capital, and program areas. The capital program, insurance reserve, outside colleges, and TC3, we don't really see as being any significant problems, so they're labeled as green. When you see them as green, we don't see any major issues within those budgets. The yellow or red show some kind of a risk factor. The contingent fund has been reduced because of the jail variance. Now we know that could either continue or not, and so we see that as a risk, but in this economic time, we think that it's a reasonable risk. The unallocated revenues, again, we've estimated sales tax. We don't know where the market's going to go. And we also have, within this budget, a policy decision on delinquent tax collection. So that's built into the budget, and it's a decision that has to be made here in the legislature. The capital program goal has been to stabilize the tax levy increase at 1% per year. We are meeting that goal, and we'll go over that at a later date. This is to help us kind of decide when we can take on new projects. This year, the major activities are the road program and health department building. We have our final payment is included in the capital program this year for the payroll system upgrade. That's all done through fund balance. Those are one-time expenses, not raising taxes for those. And we're using the capital fund balance to reduce the tax levy, as we've already discussed. Also, within the budget and capital section, we have $1.5 million set aside. $1 million, as we discussed earlier, is that FMAP reserve for the Medicaid. We're recognizing the fact that Medicaid cost is coming back to the county. So that's been set aside. We also have some contract settlements that have not been finished, and so we have some money set aside for that. These are part of the target budget. We've reduced the contingent fund in anticipation of retaining the jail variances, and we've increased unallocated revenues, assuming that delinquents tax payment deadlines will be changed. In facilities, our risk factors of the highway division. In this budget, we've reduced the paving program. We have They've seen 2 years of reductions in that budget. We reduced their budget last year by over $200,000. We also, 2010 is the last year that we have a full year of maintenance, of the road maintenance program. So all of these are going to be risks for the county to recognize 2010 and into 2011. The facilities divisions.
In our books, are the risk factors designated? We're not color coded. Are they
noted?
They're not.
So
she's going to give us a copy.
I'll give you a copy of this bill.
Thank you. Mm-hmm. Thank you.
The facilities division. We've been working every year to put money in the deferred maintenance budget. This year, because of the 6.25% reduction, that's been almost depleted. As far for Target. The airport, when you're looking at the fund balances, we see they've been able to meet their target fund balance, but there's no surplus fund balance within the airport's funds, and Weights and Measures reduced their hours, or reduced his hours as a one person. Facilities, so their target reduction, and I just want to explain for a moment that the target reductions you're going to see for all of these departments includes the 6.25% and the budget that, or what they had to absorb in the increase in fringe. So they look a little bit higher than what the 6.25% was, but it's not a true picture if you don't see that as well. So the facilities division had to reduce $178,000. They came back with an over target request of $156,000. That was for the deferred maintenance projects. County Administrator recommended $300,000 of one-time funds for those projects, and they now have about $30,000 left in target funds for the deferred maintenance program.
Is this the point where I chime in and say leave facilities and infrastructure alone? I'm quick to pull $200,000 every year from highway. All right, just thought I'd put it out there.
The utilities, taxes, insurance, again, it's as Dooley said a little while ago, this is kind of our mandate. We don't really have a choice. We have to pay these bills. It increased by $148,000. Where we did have a choice was the COFA rental expense. We increased this budget by $80,000. $30,000 was a decision made last year. $50,000 was what we realized we were going to need in additional funds to cover this expense. We increased the Board of Elections rental. That's going to go up every year. You see this every year. It goes up about $2,000 a year. And the electric and utilities expense went up $67,000. In the budget, County Administrator's recommended budget, it reduced the target rent expense by $50,000 and recommended reviewing the space study that was done for the Human Service Building. And we've added $25,000 of one-time funds to the facilities budget for reconfiguration.
Was that with the Human Services Building in mind, or just in general?
That was with the Human Services Building in mind.
Can I just insert a comment here? This would typically have been considered as a part of the review of facilities. I think it's next week. Mm-hmm. But because Lisa won't be available for that meeting, we will ask you to take a look at this as a part of the review of her budget, which is tomorrow.
Mm-hmm.
So we'll want to talk about this tomorrow evening, that's okay.
The Highway Division, they had a target reduction of $387,000. They didn't ask for any increases. The recommendation was to reduce the paving program by $290,000. Solid Waste Division, the department recommends an increase in fees for 2010. And I just want you to note that within your book, there's a five-year program that they've sent us. We slid that in next to the pages for their budget. Weights and Measures, his target reduction was $5,000, and he requested $4,000. There's no recommendation to restore those in this budget. Government Performance. So these departments that you see on the screen, we don't see any major issues with those departments at this point.
Wait a minute, Norma, can you put that back up a second, please?
You weren't done, Nathan. Nice try.
I missed something.
So this is where we can look for. Thank you.
Hey, you're on it.
what you mean by the green doesn't mean that they're in great shape.
No, no. These indicate that there's no significant problems.
In other words, you're not sort of putting in a slightly risky, hopeful number somewhere. The revenues are solid, whatever it is. That's what you mean.
Right. This doesn't mean that they're not. That's thank you.
Yes. It doesn't mean that they got all their OTRs or something like that.
No.
Okay.
No. Program areas we have that are taking on a risk. County administrations reduced their staff hours and the media contract. Information technology services has reduced their equipment budget, significantly reduced their equipment budget. The legislature has reduced their staff hours, and the Tompkins County Public Library has a significant reduction in staff and acquisitions. The Board of Elections, they have a target reduction of $55,000. They're still working through the HAVA stuff, and they've asked for $74,000 in this budget. The county administrator recommended the senior voting machine technician, which was their number one priority, and the voting machine audit, and also recommended that contingent funds be set aside for the primary election pay, because that's an unknown amount. In county administration, we had a target reduction of $54,000. We're not asking for anything back. We've reduced the deputy county administrator's hours and the public information officers. We're assuming that the county quarter, the employee newsletter, will be online only. We're not going to have any printing costs for that. We've reduced the contract for the media support with Cooperative Extension, and we've increased some funding for a program analyst. County attorney, they had a target reduction of $34,000. They've asked for an OTR for $35,000. In the recommendation, we've restored the staff hours and reduced some of the program expenses.
Norm, excuse me, where you have contingent fund, the primary election day, I haven't looked. Will the contingent fund have
an earmark?
Earmarks?
That would be the recommendation. That is.
It doesn't show in this budget.
No.
I don't know if you've done any other earmarks of contingent fund money, but if you have, it would be useful for us to get a list of those.
We have not. It's a recommendation. This is the only one that's been recommended. In the county clerk motor vehicle department, they had a target reduction of 55. The OTR was requested was $50,000 to fund digitizing county records. They also support the unallocated revenues. There's no change to the unallocated revenues. Department of Assessment had a $90,000 reduction. They asked for $81,000. There's no recommendation to restore those requests. Finance Department had a target reduction of $71,000. Their OTR is $57,000, and it's been recommended to add the one FTE to support the Health Benefits Coalition and offset that with revenue. Information Technology had a target reduction of $82,000. They asked for $17,000. The recommendation was to restore those staff reductions. The department reduced their equipment budget, as I said, that we see that as a risk for information technology services not to have equipment budget. The legislature had a $25,000 reduction. They asked for a $42,000 over target request. County administrator recommended the software maintenance, computer equipment, and local mileage. And what's not recommended is restoring 2.5 hours per week for the legislature staff. Personnel department had a $62,000 reduction and didn't ask for any replacement. They reduced staff by one FTE. The rural libraries had a $10,000 reduction. They requested 10 and there was no recommendation for that. History Center, they have a multi-year agreement, so there's no reduction in their budget at all, and they had a $3,000 increase. The County Public Libraries had a $166,000 reduction, asked for $170,000, and received maintenance of effort of $35,000. I'm buzzing through this because I have 5 minutes left. These are the departments in Health and Human Services that, again, we don't see significant problems, but like I said, the departments are going to come in and give you a lot more detail than we're able to give you through this presentation. The Health and Human Service agencies, we see a risk there because next year we expect the sales tax that they rely on to cover part of their expenses to be reduced. Cooperative Extension has asked for the Ag and Farmland Protection Board to be restored. That's been covered through the Planning Department. The Health Department has several staff reductions in built into their budget. Human Rights Commission, we're funding one time on an ongoing position, half point five FTEs. Social Services has reduction in staffs and reduction in preventive services, and the Youth Services Department has had one program eliminated and reduction of staff hours. The SPCA had a $2,000 target reduction and didn't ask for any of that back. Cooperative Extension had a $44,000 reduction, asked for $34,000, and there's no recommendation to restore any of that funding. Human Rights Division, target reduction of 27. They asked for 27. It's been recommended one time for an ongoing position. The Health Department had a target reduction of 298,000 and an over-target request of 145,000. Stop for just a second and explain. There's a new initiative that was requested by the Health Department that would reduce their request by $111,000. That's not being included in this. It's something that needs to be reviewed. So that's why it's asterisked. In the recommendation, their first priority has been approved. The community health nurse as target funding. And then point two systems analyst is one-time funded. The other positions that have been requested are not recommended in this budget.
Is the systems analyst, the point two, an existing position?
Yes, it is.
So it is an ongoing position.
It's an ongoing position, yeah. Human Services Coalition had a $24,000 reduction. They asked for $8,000 to be restored. There's no recommendation to restore that COLA request. Human Services Coalition Agencies, $29,000 reduction. They asked for $51,000. We recommended the sales tax, anything that was covered with sales tax revenue. The COLA increases were not recommended. And just want to note that they do have a new program in the Human Services Coalition, the Ithaca Health Alliance and Free Clinic. And I also want to make sure that you remember that there's a reduction in sales tax for agencies. Most likely a reduction. Nobody knows what's going to happen.
So is this the Health Alliance, are they included? Are they being funded by us? Are we reducing
that? A portion of it's funded through the city, and a portion of it, like the Human Services Coalition will be coming in and making their presentation, I think, next week. But, yeah, part of it's being funded, and you'll see that in the book. Mental Health had a target reduction of $268,000. They asked for $119,000. We've recommended target funding, the child psychiatrist services, and not recommended a multi-year funding for emergency outreach services. Both of these positions are items that the county, the legislature has funded in previous years, multi-year, six years we've been funding these for multi-year. So adding that as target funding kind of made sense. The Office for the Aging had a $71,000 target reduction. They asked for $28,000. In over-target requests. All of that was supported by the department's rollover, and all but one was recommended. That was the expenses associated to moving to the new offices. But all of that was recommended with the use of rollover, or requested with the use of rollover.
Before you leave that slide, mm-hmm. just with respect to mental health, in the first slide that began this section where we color-coded the department's green, yellow, and red. I think the one in mental health, we've got it in green. I think that color may drift more toward yellow because of that second item on there, the emergency outreach service. And I know the commissioner is going to want to talk about his concerns about that cut.
So. That's true, yeah. Tompkins Community Action had $11,000 reduction. They didn't ask for any restoration. The Recreation Partnership had a $4,000 reduction. They asked for five. We recommended the maintenance of effort be restored at four. Youth Services Department had an $86,000 reduction. They asked for $40,000. The county administrator recommended eliminating the youth program component of the Municipal Youth Services Program. Recommended supporting the transitions with one-time funding or rollover, and there's no recommendation for the partial restoration of services for high-need rural youth in this budget. Social Services had a target reduction of $605,000. They asked for $510,000 in over-target requests. A recommendation is the number one priority social welfare examiner, one FTE for coordinator of child support enforcement unit. That's funded as one time and intended to be a short term position. So this isn't an ongoing position. And recommended funding the PINS prevention. These are three probation officers that are currently on staff.
Are those the ones that are associated with the ATI programs?
No. No, these are the PINS prevention. And the director of probation is going to make her presentation this evening, so I'm sure she'll go into detail about that.
I seem to recollect that we were cutting some positions back in one department, and we were going to restore some of the funding through DSS. Do they show up on this list anyplace?
I think it's this one, Frank, that you're talking about, where without this restoration, the OTR shows up in DSS, but the impact occurs in probation. So I think this is what you may be recalling. So by recommending restoration of the PINS prevention, that OTR, we have preserved three FTEs in probation. And those are, again, it's PINS and pre-PINS.
Right.
Dispatched out into the community, so these are not the ATI, correct? The ATI positions.
And I think this, by having it in DSS, it pulls in more of a reimbursement. Probation reimbursement is piddling. But
right. Yeah, you'll see it's even more so than it used to be.
Or less so.
Or less so. Yeah.
Norma, excuse me. Mm-hmm. The OTRs for each department are in their priority order in our book.
That's right, and those priorities are set by the department.
And in DSS, the recommended requests that are being funded are not in priority order. They jump around, and that's because of the probation effect.
The recommendation is not in priority, right, they're not in priority order. So you can see the list that's of what's not recommended.
I think this is the only case where we departed from the department's priority, I think.
The health department for the systems analyst. I think right. Those were the only two places right. That we tried to stay with the department's priorities.
Can you put that back up? Mm-hmm. I want to. The not recommended ones.
The not recommended is one full-time senior clerk for food stamp program, four FTEs, project assistants, one FTE welfare fraud investigator and one FTE clerk in DSS administration, and then there's some preventive service contracts that are not recommended in this budget.
Norma, I'm sorry to belabor this. Those preventive services contracts, do those tie into any of the contract services that the agencies through the coalition might be providing?
Yeah, and I know the commissioner has been in contact with agencies that may be affected. I mean, there's been communication.
Who will Patricia or will Kathy Slaughter tell us about those?
I imagine
Patricia.
Patricia will when she does her presentation.
Thank you.
Planning, development, environmental quality, program areas. You can see that the one that we're most concerned about with risk factors are the planning department. Community Planning Department had a target reduction of $70,000. They didn't ask for any over-target requests. The department reduced the support for outside agencies.
We tried to get Frank to Ed to reserve the right to come back with his over-target request plan. So far, he won't do it.
We've got to do it.
The Soil and Water Conservation had a $7,000 target reduction and didn't request any funding. TCAT had they had no target reduction. They've asked for no over-target requests. We are recommending creating a line item for the Gadabout to leverage the STOA funding. It's been something that the county has supported. It hasn't had a direct line item. Tompkins County Area Development it was a $1,000 reduction. They didn't ask for anything back. Workforce Development had a $6,000 reduction and with no request. And One Stop Employment Center had a $28,000 reduction and didn't ask for any of that back. Public Safety, again, I think all of these departments have had to make some cutbacks, but we've tried to restore most of them. And with the exception of the Sheriff's Office and the Probation Department, don't see real significant problems in these other areas. The Sign Council had a $14,000 target reduction. They requested $24,000. We restored the department's request. The District Attorney had a target reduction of $107,000. Their over-target request was $55,000, and that's been restored. They gave back their rollover to cover this. The Emergency Response Department had a target reduction of $177,000. They asked for $106,000. We recommended restoring one full-time equivalent emergency services dispatcher, and now they asked for 1.5. We didn't restore 0.5 FTE. Just want to make note that we did increase the revenue by $250,000 in the maintenance budget, the emergency communication equipment budget, in anticipation of the 911 surcharge. OAR had a target reduction of $11,000. They asked for $4,000. There's no COLA recommendation in this budget. We did approve the use of sales tax. Probation had a target reduction of $250,000. They asked for $267,000. We recommended the use of rollover to cover their state aid reimbursement reduction that went from 17.5% to 15.5%. We recommended funding for the three probation officer positions that were budgeted in the Department of Social Services. We've not recommended the one FTE probation officer, which is currently vacant, one FTE probation supervisor that's currently vacant, 0.5 FTE transition workforce specialist, 0.5 security officer, and one FTE keyboard specialist. It's a 5-month position.
Norma, question. Did any of the vacant positions which normally create the rollover go into funding the rollover for item one, for instance, the use of rollover to cover the state aid reimbursement?
I can't really. I'm not sure of that. Probably when Patricia has an opportunity to make her presentation, she could answer that question. Sheriff's law enforcement, the target reduction was $371,000. He asked for $276,000. We've recommended one full-time deputy sheriff. We've recommended $112,000 for vehicles. $90,000 of that's target. $22,000 is one-time and offset by rollover. Not recommended is overtime for the full-time for the deputy sheriff and $73,000 of target for vehicles. In the jail, there was no target reduction in the jail, and there's no over-target request. County administration recommended increase in the medical and boarding mandate account to $300,000. Just to note that the state eliminated the reimbursement for state readies, kind of reminding you that we had to increase that budget by $120,000.
I'm sorry, one back. So the recommendation on the law enforcement is to preserve a position that's currently filled but not include the overtime for it? That's not a new position. Preventing a cut.
It's a roster position. I'm not sure. It may be. I think it is vacant today. but it's a roster position. The sheriff was going to have to cut that position out to come within target. His OTR said, I'd like that position back, restored. And when he costed that out, he also assumed a certain level of overtime that would go with that deputy. So our recommendation is we give money back for the position, but not make any assumptions about overtime that would be associated with that position.
Okay. And I think that's it. Does
Thank
anybody
you very
have any
much.
Questions?
Good timing, Norma. Not bad. Is there any general questions right at this point? Okay, let's move on to county attorney.
Jim, where am I supposed to be?
Right there.
Here?
Yes, please say your name and first and last name and what department you are for the record.
Okay, I'm Jonathan Wood. I'm the county attorney, and that's also the name of the department.
Wait, hold on.
You said the department, if they'd like to sit at the table.
Oh, all right. That I didn't know. If you want to be at the table, rock on. Here you go.
For me, it's actually what's better for you. I could be, right out of the room.
Yeah. No, you can't leave.
Okay, I'm going to try to follow the PowerPoint presentation, which was prepared by Kevin and Norma and Joe. I'm no good at PowerPoint, so if I'm saying one thing and the slide shows something completely different, it's because I'm wrong. There are just a couple things I wanted to say before getting that. Number one, with regard to the budget, we did request an OTR. The county administrator recommended most but not all of that OTR. We're in agreement with the county administrator's recommendation, and thus we're not asking for anything that's not in the tentative budget now. Second thing is just kind of a background on the county attorney's office, because we're I think somewhat different from a lot of other departments in that we don't really determine a lot of our work. A lot of our work is determined by outside forces. In other words, the county attorney's office doesn't decide who's going to sue us or who's going to bring petitions against us or who's going to file grievances against us. And thus, we don't really look at it as what programs we have and what programs we don't, but rather how to handle the work that we get most efficiently. And I believe we do that. The basic thing about county attorney's offices, unlike a lot of other county attorney's offices, we do almost all the work in-house. We hire out for some particular things. But the more we're able to do in-house, the cheaper it is, because our marginal rate is about $50 an hour. But when we go out and hire attorneys, it's usually at least $200 an hour. So the more we can do in-house, the more economical, the less it costs the county. So oftentimes, if you diminish what's in-house, you actually end up possibly significantly increasing costs. And we have achieved, I think, probably a good balance, but we do go out of house for some things now, and if we had fewer hours, we'd have to go out of house for more things, and as a result, the price would increase, not go down, the overall cost of the county. So trying to follow this PowerPoint, this is just basically the major things the county attorney's office does. We represent the county in litigation, which includes lawsuits, human rights claims, arbitrations. We have these days a lot of personnel matters, and that is largely because personnel matters are becoming more and more legal matters just by the nature of them. We have almost all our employees have contracts and laws which protect them. If you want to, for example, discipline an employee, you have to file formal charges. They're entitled to arbitrations. So what used to really be personnel stuff is now really attorney stuff. So more and more county attorney work is in the personnel area. And that's actually an area which is increasing more and more. And I expect, particularly in a coming year, where we're having what promises to be a not very good year for personnel because of no increases and certain cutbacks, that that's an area which would probably increase over the years. Sure, you're all familiar with advising departments and legislatures on legal matters and drafting contracts and requests for proposals and things like that. We do prosecute the juvenile delinquency and the PINS cases, which are essentially very similar to what the DA does for juveniles. And one thing which isn't up there because it kind of changes all the time, but we're almost always involved in some special projects which varies over the years. Our last big major project was, for example, the emergency communication system. This coming year in 2010, a lot of it is going to be on the RFP for the Recycling and Solid Waste Center. We already did the draft, but we have to do a final, and then we'll negotiate with the company. We'll negotiate a contract, and hopefully we'll oversee the, you know, along with the Solid Waste Department, the revisions to the Solid Waste Department. But almost every year there's at least one major project which takes a lot of time. And that's probably what it's going to be in 2010. Moving on to this slide. As you may recall, back in 2007, we reduced the half-time position. So we used to have four full-time people. Now we have 3.5, and that was mostly for budget reasons. Moving on to the next slide. The interesting thing about appropriations, if you can see, we actually are asking for less in 2010 than we had in 2006. So unlike many departments and almost everybody else in the world, we've actually gone down and not up. Moving on to the next. This is one of the slides which I, not necessarily anything I chose, but to follow the pattern. But these are just some of the accomplishments that we made during the year. The emergency communication system is sort of winding down, but that took a huge amount of time over the course of several years. The draft RFP for the Recycling and Solid Waste Center was a major project. We had a lot of employment issues this year. And overall, we've spent a lot of effort trying to minimize the cost of outside counsel, which I think we've done pretty well through some changes through the years, through this year. Moving on to the next slide. If I'm moving too fast or if people have questions, just let me know, because I'm not too used to doing this. The pressure points for 2010 are, and I think what they mean is you know, what could significantly impact our budget. And one is we just plain have a lot of cases, and we have a lot of cases which look like they're going to take a lot of time. You know, our docket's pretty full. And, of course, you never know what will come in during the year, but we already have a lot of cases, so it looks like a busy year. And also, as I mentioned before, I expect it to be a busy year in personnel simply because of the situation with personnel. There'll be fewer raises, obviously. There'll be fewer employees. So that can't happen. Also, as I mentioned before, you know, we do have the RFP and for the Recycling and Solid Waste Center, which will take a lot of time. The proposed budget, this slide, I'm not sure it really shows a whole lot, but obviously the OTR is relatively small relative to the target budget, and the difference between, there's some difference, as you can see, between what we requested and what the county administrator is recommending. That's the difference between the red line on the left and the red line on the right. It's a difference of about $8,000 or so, but we, you know, we accept the county administrator's recommendation. And this is just final, like what I said before. The way I view it, if you cut down on our time, in effect, because we're pretty much maxed out as we are, and we already have to hire out some, I think it just increases what we have to hire out, and it actually could significantly raise the cost of attorneys. And over time, we've actually, not just our county attorney budget has gone down, but also the overall cost of the county for attorney time has gone down very significantly over the years as we've taken on more and more stuff in-house. So the over-target request is, I mean, the only way we can get to the level that we had to for the proposed budget was to cut time. And The county administrator, I believe, wisely saw that as actually something which would cost more money, but did look very closely at some of the other things in the budget, like equipment, and recommended some cuts in that, and we accept those. And this is just basically, well, what would happen if they're not restored? I've already discussed. I think what actually happens is there's a significant increase in cost because basically the matters go outside instead of us doing them. And I think it's costly, but it's also somewhat inefficient for us not to do what we can do. And I guess that's it. That's the slide. If anybody has any questions, probably every other department head could now see what not to do. But at least I tried to follow the slides. If there aren't questions, I'd be happy to sit down.
No questions. Thank you very much, Jonathan. Not bad. You followed the script pretty well. Thank you. Next on, as you look at your schedule, it is probation and community justice.
I would love to join the table.
Well, please do. The only thing you have to do is say your name and what department you are.
Patricia Fuchel, Director of Probation.
Come on up.
Where would you like to be?
Well, wherever you want to go. Sure.
So good evening, everyone.
Good evening.
Good evening.
Okay. What pages are we on?
You're not math this page.
Oh, I'm sorry. Thank you, Michael. 67 and 318.
Excuse me. There are some extra departments with extra sheets, and there was none from the attorney, and I don't see any from probation. Is that right?
Correct. So it's all on PowerPoint.
Thank you.
Okay, well, starting off, my presentation is just a general description of what we do at probation. And the major services we do provide are intake, which refers to working with our PINs voluntarily, families coming in and wanting to try to resolve problems, our JDs, who are issued appearance tickets by the local police. We provide investigations both at the family court and the criminal court. For family court, we do predispositional investigations on the PINs and the JDs. We do custody investigations, visitation investigations, and of course for the criminal courts we do pre-sentence investigations for the county. And we also provide supervision both at the family court level for our adjudicated PINs and JD cases and also for our adult criminal population. Those top three are our mandated services. By law we have to provide those services. And then we have alternative programs and graduated sanctions, differential supervision, which is supervising individuals depending on their risk and need level. We have our beloved community service program, specialized caseloads. We offer a specialized DWI caseload and intensive supervision caseload for our high-risk population, criminal cases. We offer electronic monitoring as an alternative to incarceration. And we also have drug courts and the day reporting program. So that, in a nutshell, describes probation. This slide represents our full-time equivalents from 2006 to 2010. I do want to point out, though, that if none of my OTRs are approved, that 2010 figure will actually be 37 individuals in the department. It currently reflects 40 because it does include the OTRs, but if none are approved, it will actually be reduced to 37 people in the department.
But this is the recommended number. The three are included in the recommended number, correct?
My understanding in this slide is that it's the current positions we are at now, including my OTRs, but if the OTRs are not included,
right. Then.
Okay, this slide will show our budget over the years. I think, you know, it's important to recognize factors that influence the budget, including increases in salaries and fringes over the years, fringe rate changes, reduction in our state aid reimbursement, our application of certified rollover in varying amounts, inflation, and then structural changes. I think it shows a very steady pattern of expenses, and I think it also shows that we've controlled our expenses to maintain a steady local share over the past years. Okay, some of the highlights. I pulled all of this from our annual report. It really reflects what we've done in 2008, just because it's really kind of hard at this mid-year to do stats for 2009. But the first one, and I'm just highlighting a lot of the things in different areas of the department. But 68% of our youth that were referred for pre-PIN services, intake services in 2008, have avoided further contact with the juvenile justice system. 39% reduction in PINs intake placement in 2008 compared to 2007, which equates with saving the county dollars for detention rates. Our mandated service of supervision and investigation, we, you know, supervise 685 cases, and we've completed 589 investigations for the criminal courts over the year.
Pat, are those 685 individual cases, or are some of those repeat?
Some of them are duplicates, yeah. Some people have dual supervision cases, so the number might be a little bit reduced. But
is that trend increasing, flat, or?
It's about the same. For our community service program, which is, this is the combined total of our adult criminal service, community service program, our juvenile community service program, and also the WEP program that we do for social services. So a total of 6,647 hours completed in our community. Our day reporting program, we have a 66% successful completion rate. And I put in parentheses there that we diverted, I believe, 192 individuals from jail. Of that 192, there was a fair number who were pretrial release individuals, and also a very big number of drug court sanctions who were placed in the day reporting program instead of going to jail. We had 97 job placements, and 92 received educational services throughout the year. And the last one I've just put in there, electronic monitoring, we're using it both for our juvenile and adult population. It really increased last year, and because for the adults at least, it's an alternative to incarceration. I believe that's a big cost savings for the county, and also for the juvenile population, because hopefully we're diverting some kids going to detention. Okay, pressure points. Well, it was a big cut for us, $290,000. Our state aid continues to be reduced over the years. We're currently at 15.5% state aid reimbursement. It keeps going down. I think when I started, it was at 21 years ago, it was at 40% or higher. A big pressure point for us is the cross-departmental OTR, which we just talked about a little bit, and has to do with the three probation officers in the family court who do PINs and pre-PINs work. So that's a big one. If that's not approved for DSS, then that's really going to impact my department, because I'm really going to have to scramble and figure out what we're going to do there. We have an unknown impact of the Rockefeller drug law reform and judicial diversion on caseload sizes. We're starting to see some people who normally would have gone to state prison now being put on probation. We have two cases so far. I'm anticipating that when judicial diversion starts October 7th, that we're going to see bigger numbers. But it's all a big unknown. We really don't know. And then, of course, there's current vacancies within the department, which affect caseload sizes, unit sizes, and reduction in services. The slide shows basically in red what our OTR request is. And we cut $290,000, but we're asking for $153,000 in OTR. So how did we meet our target? There's currently a supervisor position vacant. It's the position that I vacated when I became director. I did not fill that position. I really anticipated this problem, and so I decided to reorganize the department. And so all of the people in my unit were spread out amongst the existing supervisors. There's currently a probation officer vacant. Was vacated at the end of June, and I opted not to fill that position. We eliminated an RN position over at Community Justice Center. She worked with the day reporting clients and the drug court clients, and we just eliminated that. I eliminated funding to the drug court, specifically payment of Sobriters, which is an alcohol monitoring device that they use, and also stopped paying treatment providers to attend the drug court team meetings. So some of these are hidden. You don't see these in the OTRs. Okay.
Could you talk about what's lost when you don't attend those team meetings? I thought that was a very important part of it.
I'm not sure if the drug courts are going to be able to come up with separate funding for that, but I did give them much advance warning that I wasn't going to be able to pay for that funding anymore. So, yes, they're going to have to figure out some other. I mean, it is important to have the treatment provider there to give input into the person's recovery and how they're doing in treatment. To say whether or not that could be done with written reports, I don't know, but... It is a loss for the team. It is a team concept, and so that would be a loss.
That means specifically cars and alcohol?
Correct. Yeah. I also had to reduce. Now, these are currently filled positions. These next two, the transition workforce specialist and the security officer, they are filled positions, and I'm reducing them each to half-time. And we have a keyboard specialist who plans on retiring at the end of July next year, and so I will not be filling that position.
In other words, that's not funded from January to July. At court, at the moment.
No, it is funded from January to July, but from August through December, it's not funded. She retires
but
the end
she's
of
not, she's
from January to July, it is funded.
It is funded. Okay. Norma, I'm sorry. Norma, I thought that's the one you told me was not and you didn't fund.
Yes, it's funded. Okay. Yeah.
Can you point out where in our books, this is a question for Pat as much as Norma, where in our books you're showing the recommended positions for the OTRs and the ones that weren't recommended?
A separate section.
Under each OTR, 328. That's what I'm going to be starting next.
Where you list the positions, which are the three positions that are in there?
I don't understand your question.
OTR 85 is all one position. OTR 86 is one position.
Correct.
87 one position. So you read the description and see that.
So starting at page
20. If you look in the summary book, the summary pages, the yellow pages on 67, okay. I'm seeing a recommended OTR that says zero. Is that not? That's 84.
That's
just
one.
85.
Probation
okay.
State,
85 is zero.
Probation officer.
86 is zero. Where do we get to the ones that are recommended?
It's just the first ones. The only one is recommended.
OTR number 084, which I'm going to talk about right now.
Four.
Reduction in probation services state aid.
In my book, it's showing a zero, that's not recommended.
Wait, you're talking about on page 67 of the yellow page, the buff colored pages, right?
Yeah, or it's in the white book, too, somewhere.
I see that with one time.
One time.
This is one book.
county administrator.
I think this is the restoration of state aid, using one-time money to restore the lost state aid.
Correct.
And but for that restoration, there would have had to be a position cut. So it's kind of a indirect way of supporting one position in that budget. And it is with one-time money.
Yes.
The three that we talked about earlier, I don't know if that's where this is going. Again, that's really the money is in DSS. The positions are in Pat's roster, and they don't show up as being affected because her budget assumes that there will be money behind those positions.
Okay.
Mike and then Martha.
I guess I'm just kind of curious as to where caseloads would stand after this as compared to maybe last year or the year before. Have caseloads been going down or up? And I don't know if there's any metric to even measure what is a good caseload.
Oh, that's interesting because we're doing research on that now about caseload standard. The American Probation and Parole Association, they recommend for the moderate to high-risk caseloads, it would be one probation officer to 50 cases. And your more intensive caseloads like ISP, the drug courts, 1 to 20. So right now, the drug courts and ISPs, they're okay. We're meeting that standard. But the core probation officers currently carry a caseload of about 60. So we're above the what the American Probation and Parole Association is recommending.
Martha.
So with the current budget as the administrator has proposed it, does the caseload go up or down or stay the same?
Well, what we've done is we have redistributed some of the caseload, so the numbers are creeping up a little bit for the remaining core probation officers. Okay. And the investigations were very heavy on investigations because that was also a function of the vacant probation officer position. Does that answer your question?
Yeah, okay. And then back to this keyboard specialist, I'm looking at page 71, 72, 70 and 71 in the buff colored. OTR 89, keyboard specialist, 5 months salary and fringe. There's nothing there. It was requested at Target, and there's zero in administrator and zero in final, and I thought that's what you were saying, Norma.
Okay, we were discussing that, and Pat may have a different way of funding it, but it's not reflected on these pages. Right.
Maybe
roll over, she may have just...
Well, is there some other way that's funded, Pat?
She's currently in our budget, and she's in our budget until July 31st. She is an existing position right now. And then as of July 31st, she will be retiring. And we're asking for restoration of the $16,801, which is her salary from August until December to make up. Like if we were to hire someone else to replace her, we would need that money to hire.
I see. So she's in the budget while she's on staff, but there's no replacement in the budget.
That's right.
Thank you. Okay.
Okay.
Any other questions? Go ahead.
I listed these in priority at the time when I did this PowerPoint presentation. I would like to change the priority, if I could.
That's not a lie. Go ahead.
Because the probation officer and probation supervisor are currently vacant positions, you know, we have made accommodations, we've made adjustments, we've reorganized to address those. The transition workforce specialist and the security officer, though, are real people in real positions. They're going to lose half of their salary. They have bills to pay, and you know, just like the rest of us. And that the money that I'm using to cover the remaining 20 hours for each of those people was money saved from not filling the supervisor position all that time. So it would be rollover being used to continue to pay for those people. And I feel, you know, that we have sacrificed at the department. We didn't fill the position. Supervisors are very, very busy. Units are bigger. There's more people to supervise. work is, so that's my plea.
Okay, let me ask you one question. Delineate the number, is it number 087 you want to change the priority on?
Yes, 087 and 088, I'd like to move up under 084. So it'll be 084, 087, 088.
Okay, Michael.
If I understand what you just said, you're anticipating rollover, so you're anticipating spending 2009 certified rollover in 2010, and you're asking for consideration of that, which is an unusual practice, but I understand the request. Okay.
Well, Mr. Chairman.
Sure, Frank.
That's the question I asked earlier. If any of the, maybe I was jumping the gun a little bit about the anticipating using rollover to restore the positions, and the answer is no. So now it's a maybe?
Well, it's not on paper. That's a verbal request just came to us this minute as to how she's changing her priorities and how she would fund it.
My sense is there's no answer now.
Just
that you can certainly move things around if you want to, but you know, there's no determination.
I'll just clarify that at present is no way in our budgeting process to account for that request. We would have to do it either on the tax levy or from contingency and assume at some point the anticipated rollover, if it became certified, would go back into contingency or something like that. We could do it that way. But we can't put in our budget framework an anticipated rollover. That's too much speculation from our past practice.
Martha.
So the transition workforce specialist in our books is 087, and you sort of want to, you're not talking about changing the numbers there because.
No.
Got it. Okay. Just that would be priority two.
Yes.
Okay. And then
whatever it was disappeared.
Sorry.
It is now just 087 priority.
Yep. Just change the PowerPoint. That's great.
Yeah. Thank you. Any other?
Is that the
Will?
Yep. Is that the
Way back, you were talking about eliminating the Sobriator and the what was the nurse that was going to be? There were two items.
For the drug courts,
yes.
We eliminated Sobriators and we eliminated funding treatment providers to sit at the team meetings.
Okay. So does that service go away completely, or do you anticipate that would be picked up by?
I'm not sure what Judge Raleigh has in mind. I don't know if he's going to be able to get a grant maybe to keep covering that. So it could be that the team meetings will no longer have the treatment providers sitting at the table. I don't know the answer to that question. And I don't know if they'll be able to fund the Sobriators. I do know that my department has picked up and gotten funding through the Stop DWI board and to pay for SCRAM, which is the ankle bracelet which monitors alcohol consumption 24/7, and that is going to be utilized by both drug courts. So that should pick up some of the loss of the Sobriators.
Thank you.
Let me ask you, were you finished?
I guess I was. I was kind of going to go through each OTR, but it seems
well,
like...
Well, please go ahead and do what you need to do to finish what you wanted to do. And then we'll do the question.
Well, we sort of jumped around, so I guess I feel okay as long as everybody understands the priority, that I've switched the priority. Martha, did you have a question?
No,
we'll go back.
You can go through. That's all right. I'll remember it.
No, that's okay. It's all right.
Okay. So the effect of cutting those two items in the drug courts, we should probably hear from somebody who's really directing those teams and is, you know, on the front line of that to find out what the effect is going to be, right? So would that be Judge Raleigh or
Raleigh or the coordinator, Desiree Rogers?
Desiree. Okay, I guess I would ask that whoever's managing the schedule of this party Can we add then, this is one of the things that we do sometimes, we say, well, you know, at a future meeting, I'd like to hear from such and such. So I guess I would like somebody to find out who should come in to speak to us about that effect.
I could do that for you. I mean, if you, but, I could broach it to Judge Rowley and to Desiree if you'd like.
Okay. That'd be great.
Any other questions,
thank
Julie?
You.
Well, Martha, were you thinking of having someone during these presentations or when it comes time to vote on that part of the budget? When did you want it? Earlier?
Yeah, I think it'd be better during the informational
during the
chunk of time.
Mark?
Just as a matter of we're beginning to get into some precedent setting, I prefer to have the department head summarize. If the department head can gather the information, that's great. If we have every impact of every position being asking the actual people impacted by it to come in here, we're going to have quite a long parade. I think we can rely on our department head to do that investigation and research and summarization.
So noted. Patricia, are you finished?
I think I just want to review just a little bit.
Go ahead.
The security officer and the
please
transition
do.
Workforce, because they are live people and I feel they deserve to be talked about. The transition workforce specialist, 20 hours of her positions in Target. Last year, I was able to secure the ATI bail monies to pay for her other 20 hours. That was a one-time funding. It's gone. That's why I'm in this fix this year. Her 20 hours that I'm asking for involves working with inmates in the jail who've been identified to participate in the jail reentry program, but she also works with other inmates who are seeking employment transitional services prior to the release. And so not only does she work with them in the jail, but she also does follow up with them when they're released from jail, and she does that in her office over at the Community Justice Center. So if she is not granted this OTR and she's reduced to the 20 hours, I'm going to have to say that she will no longer be going to the jail. I mean, that would cease. And I think that's important. I think it's an important piece for people who are incarcerated to be looking for employment while they're in jail, working on the resume, developing maybe interviewing skills with her, and then doing the follow-up and getting the hand-holding when they come out. So that's why I'm moving that up in priority as well. Security officer position, we currently have two full-time security officers over at CJC. They monitor the following populations that come into the jail, or I mean into the building: day reporting participants, our felony and misdemeanor drug court participants, our family treatment court participants, and other visitors. So the building is non-secure. It's not like HSB where you need a swipe card. It's pretty much open, and they are responsible for wanding the day reporting participants, checking for weapons. They're the first point of contact for anyone who comes into the building. And their responsibility is to address problems as they arise. And if anyone's been over to the day reporting program, depending on the population that you have there at any given time, it can be calm, and or it could be kind of unruly, depending on a lot of the attitude. So we rely a lot on the security officers to diffuse situations and to keep things going calmly and smoothly over there. So by losing a half-time security officer there, you know, the bulk of it is going to be shifted over to the remaining security officer, and I'm concerned that maybe problems aren't going to be resolved so easily and quickly as they currently are. And then just concern for safety for everyone in the building. Thank you.
Okay, Mike.
So
and then Frank.
So is the typical deployment of security officers generally two at a time, or are they staggered so that if someone's on vacation when you have one, that, I mean, I'm just making sure I understand.
We have two full-time.
So typically, every
yes.
day?
Yes.
And then if someone's on vacation, you have one, or do you get a replacement? So during
one.
Those times when it's one, have you experienced disruptions?
Well, this is what happens when there's one. Usually the deputy director, Big Dave Wolf, goes over there and checks up and makes sure that things are going smooth. And so we have like that backup of support to the deputy director. He usually goes over and checks up and will make himself available during really busy times, like when people are checking in first thing in the morning and assistance is needed. So that's how we deal with that.
Frank.
Thanks, Pat. My first question is for Norma. First, are we going to get sets of these presentations?
Yes, I meant to print them out That's my fault. So I will get these to you.
Could we ask generally, and it just happens, Pat, I'm sorry you're the second person to present.
It's okay.
You see the second bullet where it says 39% reduction in pins placement for 2008, da da da. Could we translate the 39% into a number, as we did in the third bullet, so that we know, with all due respect, percentages can do, you know, 39% of a small number is different than 39% of a large number. It'd be helpful to know how many actual cases, is that what it is, cases, placements,
that actually represent. I can get that for you.
Well, and I think, but that's not directed at probation. That's anybody making a presentation. It certainly would be helpful to have that. But this one is for probation. The next slide, Kevin. See the 97, the second bullet, 97% job placements?
No. That's just 97 actual job placements.
Say that again.
That was 97 people actually received obtained job placements.
Job placements.
Not percent.
No, I understand. It's 97 individuals.
Yes.
How do you do a follow-up to see how many of them retain the jobs after a certain period of time?
I think as much as we can. I mean, sometimes, you know, when they leave the day reporting program, we don't ever
see
them
again.
Yeah. So it's difficult to track people after they leave us. Sometimes they come back and they say, I'm still working, or they check in with us.
I don't mean somebody coming back as a client.
No. We have a lot of people who check back in with us, who are no longer involved in the system, but check back with us to let us know how they're doing.
Thanks.
Martha, question?
Pat, the overall caseload, would you spend a little more time elaborating on, because this is your information time. I think we're all just kind of getting warmed up here, but this is your shot mostly. If you could tell us, all right, two things. One is I would like to know to hear about the effect on the reentry program, whether that's from you at a later time or Patricia at Carrie at a later time, or, I mean, that's on the to-do list somewhere. But about the Rockefeller drug laws, if you could elaborate on that a little bit, because, you know, we've heard a lot at the Public Safety Committee about that being a really big deal.
Yes. Well, with the Rockefeller drug law reform, individuals who were previously mandatory incarceration given their level of offense, it's no longer mandatory. So that means they're eligible for community-based supervision, which means we are going to be seeing those people. And like I said, we already have two people who, were convicted of Class B felonies. That would have meant a prison term, mandatorily, no negotiation, but now they're eligible for community-based supervision, so we have those people. The judicial diversion program, which goes into effect October 7th, gives the court a lot of discretion. They can, again, depending on the level of offense, there's certain eligibility requirements, but it does open it up to where people can now be supervised in the community. I'm not sure how it's going to play out yet, whether we'll be seeing these people on an interim probation sentence, given a trial period where they have to obtain a substance use evaluation, and they have to remain in the community under some form of supervision. We're going to see them. So we don't know yet how many numbers that's going to be. That's all going to depend on, frankly, the judge and the district attorney's office.
Martha, you had a second question or no?
The point was that on the to hear from later list, the reentry program and the effect of the workforce specialist going away.
Okay. Will?
Just building on that question, Martha raised it, Pat. I'm actually glad that we're doing that diversion. I think that's a sensible thing. Is there any money flowing to localities, or is the state basically just shifting the problem downward?
Some of the bigger counties are eligible to receive, I think it's through DCJS, there's some grant money available, but Tompkins County is not one of them because they feel our numbers don't merit it. but some of the bigger counties are eligible for that. And it is based, you would have to apply for it, and there would be performance measures, and you would have to prove that you're either laying off someone or you're filling a vacant position, I think, restoring somebody to a position. So it's tied in with the stimulus money.
Okay. Carol, you had your hand up. You have a question?
Yeah, I just want to know some more about judicial diversion. Who's determining the diversion, and what will the upcoming year depend upon in terms of what it will cost or what it will take instead?
Okay, well, it's complicated in terms of who's eligible and who's not. So that would be up to the judge and the district attorney to decide if the crime fits the category of eligibility. And then they would decide whether or not to, the judge decides whether or not to try this diversion program. And then it could look like a number of different things. They could be put on a period of interim probation, and if they do well, maybe, and do the substance abuse treatment, their charge could be dismissed, it could be reduced, they could be then sentenced to formal probation. So it looks, there's a number of different looks to the program. So it's not a single one-size-fits-all approach.
Okay. Any other questions? Martha and Julie.
If I don't say it now, I'll forget. Congressman, a number of us met about a year ago with Congressman Mike Arcuri, who, as you know, was a district attorney before Congressman. And he had said he's very interested in these alternative programs and we should contact him for funding. I don't know if we should talk about what a proposal would look like, and I can find out what's available there.
Okay, thank you, Mark.
And Julie, have your hand up?
Yes, I'm just curious. You have a budget line for professional services, and I just wondered which professional services you hire.
Where is that, Joan? We have contracts with a certain number of day reporting. Is that what you're referring to?
I don't know what I'm referring to.
How much is in the line?
I passed it earlier. I'm sorry. I'll look for it again.
We have a number of contracts.
Since it's just a curiosity question, don't worry about it now.
I'll take that as a. I'll get back to you later. Mike?
One more quick question on the security officer. So, again, it's if someone's out on vacation, Dave Wolf covered, which I don't think is a great use of the deputy director's time.
I agree.
You mentioned, and while you said that, though, that there are busy times and lighter times. So if we did not restore and it was 1.5 persons, could that time judiciously be allocated for the busy time?
That was my plan.
Okay.
That was my intention.
Are there any other questions for Pat?
There it is, line 54442.
What page are you on?
320.
Well, it's in different units, though.
I thought you said that was I'll get back to you.
Oh, well, that was my impression, but apparently it didn't.
That's fine.
There's
okay.
Nothing for
you. Mark, you have your hand.
Yeah. I'm looking in the white pages here, the full base budget, and you mentioned before about some cuts kind of being hidden because they're in the base budget. So I see the microcomputer specialist, and that I have fond memories of Kathy Lanthal saying how important the microcomputer specialist was, and we always we would, I think, fund it one time, like over and over again. It looks like that's gone.
We got 2-year funding for that last year.
Right.
So that would come up again next year for 2011.
Okay, so it must be somewhere else. Okay. All right. Thanks.
If there's nothing else,
title. Okay.
Systems analyst.
If there's nothing else, we are done with this division. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Appreciate your presentation. Let me look at the schedule for a moment. You can all note that there was a break schedule of 6:30. It is 6:45. Do you want to do a 10-minute break, or would you like to see the rural library people who are right back there right now? How many want to continue on? 1, 2, 3. And how many do not want to continue on and they want to take a little break? One. And okay, in case of ties, how many times do I get to vote? I think we'll take a break for, can I say 10 minutes? Welcome back, everyone. And we have the World Libraries, and I see them in the back of the room. And if whoever the spokesperson is would like to come to that microphone, or you may come up here and sit at this table if you would like.
This is fine.
You're fine.
Is it on?
Before you say anything, I have one thing, a piece of business I want to get from Norma. Norma, you want to tell the assemblage what you told me a little bit ago?
I just want to remind everybody that in your book, behind each of the department's budgets is a list of contracts and memberships. So when you're looking at lines like contractual services.
I know about those. I looked there, didn't make it clear what they were for.
Okay.
Thank you, Norma.
You're welcome.
Okay. Let me mention for all of you, line item budget page is 119. The OTR on the Rural Library Services is on page 21. And go ahead.
Okay. Is this on? No. Am I okay? You can hear me anyways.
No.
No? No?
Move the switch and see. Is it the sound on? You need it. Okay. You need it just near your mouth. That's all. Bend it up for you.
So my name is Diane Campbell. I'm the director for the Southwest Library in Dryden, and I'm 21.
Thank you. So I'm going to have each of the other directors quickly introduce themselves so you can put a face to a region.
Thank you.
Your first, John.
I'm John Cohen. I'm the director of the Library.
I'm Molly Fass. I'm director of the Ulysses Philomathic Library in Schumannsburg.
So that's the crew. We appreciate the hard decisions that you guys have to make. We know that money is tight for everyone everywhere, and we also thank you for your funding that we've received over the years. It's been very helpful and very critical for our operations. So thank you for that. And I want to explain why we decided to go ahead and ask for an over-target request, which I know was encouraged that we did not do that. But we wanted to get our level of funding up to what we had last year, basically because we've seen, as I know a lot of organizations have, but we've seen, when I looked at my numbers from January to September from 2008, comparing them to 2009, I saw a 20% increase in library circulation and about a 15% increase in patrons that are now actively using the library that didn't last year. And I think a lot of it ties into the same ball of wax that we're all dealing with, which is the economy. People are coming in to use the library services because families can get movies, books, you know, all the things that they can get free, essentially, sort of free, from the library, without having to buy them. And we've also seen a lot of people coming in to use the library services. We were lucky enough through Gates Foundation funding to get state-of-the-art computers, which are better than my computer at home, big wide screens, and we have internet access available in all of our libraries. And people are coming in. Almost all the job applications now are online. Tax forms are online, government policy, government social services things, a lot of things are online. So we're not only providing the online access for job and career searches, we do see a lot of people coming in asking us for help. We have links on our website now, too, that link directly to careers and job opportunities in Tompkins County. We're writing resumes for people, setting up email accounts, and interfacing with them. And one of the reasons that rural libraries are busier is because people know us, and it can be a really awkward thing going in looking for a job when you've had one or when you're desperate. And they know us and we know them, so we provide a support to them that is beyond the service that the library just provides. So we're seeing a huge increase in our usage. And to get our funding back to what we had last year, I mean, in some ways it's still a cut because our staff is working twice as hard, but we aren't, you know, we're not changing anything. We're not changing our hours. We're not changing our support services. We're still there. And we don't want to have to cut any of that for anyone. A point that I like to make for rural libraries is the rural library user is every man. It's need blind, it's age blind, it's income level blind, and gender blind. Everyone can be a library user. I'm sure you all have library cards in your purses or wallets. So you don't have to qualify in any way to be a library user. And all the services are available to you. And they're usually available to you in a very convenient location. And often evening hours as well. So we're there for our communities. And every dollar that you give to one library is like a dollar you give to all of them. Because we have interlibrary loan services. So everything we get, we let everyone else use. So that's pretty much our spiel. We're seeing a lot more use. We're excited about it, and we're happy about it. We're happy that people are using libraries and that we're able to help them, hopefully get employed and get the materials they want. So we encourage you. We know it's a challenge because everybody needs that extra penny. But we're encouraging you to think about it again, maybe, and see if there's any financing available to put us back to last year's levels of funding. So, if there's any questions for any of us, we'd be happy to take them. Or not. I'll let it. See, I kept it kind of short.
Are there any questions? Anyone? Don't feel out of it. No. So go ahead.
I just wondered if each of the libraries has seen similar increases, you know. Anybody wants to take that on or just nod or shake your head?
Yeah. We at Shrewsburg have seen our teen program participation double this summer. Our adult program participation double as people look for more free recreational activities. We've also seen our circulation go up by as much as 20%.
If you're going to answer, please come to the microphone.
Okay, sorry.
I'm Molly Faust from the Schumannsburg Library. We have seen our circulation rise drastically since just a year ago. We have also seen our teen program attendance has more than doubled. Our adult program attendance has gone up by about 20 to 30%. In some cases, during parts of the year, has doubled as well. People are looking for free recreational activities. We offer music concerts and lectures, continuing education, and a lot of things that you simply can't get anywhere else in the community. We also have a lot of people coming in, as Diane mentioned, looking for jobs. We added 6 new computers last year, and yet there's constant lines for them. It's difficult to keep all of those computers in repair and to give people the opportunities to use them. And they're printing off resumes. They're asking us for help with their cover letters. The staff is constantly busy with that job searching, and we also have seen just a lot of increase in terms of people who are unemployed using the library as a community center to kind of heal from some of the depression and effects of the recession. So,
thank you. Anyone else want to comment?
Follow up on that as well.
Certainly.
Hi, John from the Groton Library. I've actually only been on the job 7 days, so I can't answer that directly, although my predecessor's statistics are indicating the same rise, which was your question. But I will just say anecdotally, also follow up on this, from the moment we opened to the moment we closed, our computers are in constant use, and we just added one, and it made no difference. Our computers are in constant use. We're adding another one in a month, through the Gates Foundation. And based on the waiting lists, it won't make a difference. They're in constant use. So,
Pam.
Well, I just wanted to say that I don't know if we'll be able to restore your OTR or not, but I really do appreciate what you provide to our communities, and it's just a tremendously important piece, and I wish we could give you a lot of money, but we can't, and so.
Frank, Greg, Carol.
I thank you all for coming. I'm not sure if this is a question for Karen or not, but those of us that have been associated for quite some time with the libraries, and it's glad you're all new faces to me. Can you say, or any one of you say, or perhaps Karen say, what has you seen an increase in accessibility and services that you're asking from the Finger Lakes Library System, from Karen's organization?
Well, I think that perhaps one of the most important services to the rural libraries and the cardholders that they serve is the interlibrary loan service. And we are seeing that constantly increase. We've seen each year it has gone up 10%, 12%. The last couple of years, the volume has almost doubled. We're seeing our delivery vans go out almost at capacity. One of the things that we're looking at is how can we possibly add a third route so that we can lessen the load that each of our drivers takes out every day. So certainly that demand is growing. We're being used more and more by the state and also by the Gates Foundation as the conduit for some of this grant money. So, for example, the computers that you have heard the other library directors mention have basically come through us. What happens is the Gates funding comes to us. We divide it up according to the formula that they impose on us, and we purchase the computers for the libraries. We stage the computers. We configure them. We take them out. We install them. We make them part of the network. And so that, of course, demand for that service is increasing as well. I'm trying to think what else might be extremely important. The outreach department constantly sees new requests for service. The outreach department serves people who can't access their local library, either because they're disabled or for one reason or another they have mobility problems. And so we have a program that picks up the slack, and we now have a waiting list for that service. I have three empty positions, and I can't fill them because of state cuts. So, you know, we're doing the best we can with outreach, but we are seeing an increased demand that we actually can't fill. Does that answer
your
question?
Yeah, it does. Karen, have you, since they're relatively new directors, have you had any of them do penance in doing the master application for the Universal Fund?
They're going to have to address that themselves. We've had our own altercations, shall we say?
Yeah, we sure have.
The E-rate program.
It's only been 10 years. Right?
They're not terribly flexible. Is anybody else having problems with E-rate? The E-rate application?
Yeah.
He knew about that, even though he's on the job 24 hours.
That's a program that I don't think is going to loosen up anytime soon, Frank. It's rigid. It's very convoluted, and I don't see them giving up the program they've established.
Next question.
It costs more staff time than it saves you.
Let's get that on the record. That's been one of our arguments. Thank you. Thanks.
Go ahead, Greg.
I don't know if any of the directors want to speak to this. I'm not surprised to hear that they all report over-the-top use of their computers. I know in my area, not just access to a computer, but access to high-speed internet is quite hard to come by. I don't know if they want to say anything about it. There may not be anything to say about it, but I'm certain that in other areas other than the Ulysses Enfield Newfield area, access to not just computers but high-speed internet is very precious, few and far between.
Follow with this. For us in the village of Dryden, it's a pocket of high-speed internet access. But you don't have to get too far outside not to. And the other thing a lot of us have done, which doesn't address high-speed quite as much, but we're all pretty much wireless as well. So we get a lot of people who come in with their laptops and do a lot just hanging out at the library using the wireless services.
I'll just speak for Lansing. We, in North Lansing, we don't really have high-speed internet. They don't. So wireless is very key in our community. And my community rooms are, not only are my three and then soon four computers always full, but our community rooms are also full. And I've had to move things around in Lansing to try to make more what I call hangout space, but places for people to do their homework on their laptops. I have many high school kids and a lot of kids that go to community college that come in that are there from when I open up at 3 in the afternoon until I close at 8. And then they're sitting on, they can still get it on out in their cars, and they can also get the on my front steps. So they're sitting there, you know, hanging out, drinking their coffee, doing their homework. And it really is invaluable to Lansing that we have this library with the high-speed internet access, and the wireless access is just so important to the community. So thank you.
Thanks, Susie. Someone else had their hand up. Carol?
Yeah. Greg, your point is well taken. Maybe in another portion of our budget discussions we can talk about how we can provide more broadband access throughout the county. I want to thank you all for coming in together and for coming to us with sort of equal requests and equal over-target requests. That makes a big difference to have you come in united. I had a question about the Gates funding and whether that also went equally to the various libraries and whether it also provided any staff support that it took to set up those computers and to install them and now run them. And then also what the kind of staff time it takes to report back to Gates on that.
Can you go back and repeat your first question, please? This is a whole lot.
Whether the Gates funding came equally to all the libraries and what it takes to keep that grant going.
It is not equal, but the formula that's used is determined by the Gates Foundation. It doesn't always make sense to us. They determine poverty level for the most part, but they use their own formulas. They don't use standard means of determining poverty level. And we're given those formulas. The system is given those formulas. We don't have a choice there. We have in the past tried to help libraries appeal when Gates has made a decision, but it usually doesn't go very far. So some of our member libraries were eligible for the Gates money. Some of them were not. And there didn't seem to be a whole lot of sense as to who was eligible or how many computers they were eligible for. The Gates Foundation has actually been through a whole series of grants to libraries. This is the latest in their grants. They decide what they want to fund. It's not a competitive grant situation where we don't apply. They decide what they are going to fund in any one grant year. They started out with a hardware grant, and then they moved to various other types of, sometimes it would be like software, sometimes it would be training, sometimes it would be community training, sometimes it would be staff training. Now they're back again to the hardware. How long the Gates grants might continue, we have no idea. This grant was the first one that they provided us with a small piece of administrative funding in the grant as a whole. And it isn't enough to compensate for the hours that our staff has spent dealing with setting the computers up in each of the libraries. We wish it was, but it's not.
Are there any other questions? If not, Susie, you have a question for us?
Say,
I just wanted to say that in addition to the funding that we get from the county and the tax dollars we get, I just want to assure you that we are also, we do actively look for funds other places where we write grants for things that we need to get. It's not that we're getting our tax money and our county money and that's it. I mean, I just got a check today for $2,000 just to buy some much needed summer reading materials that our community just can't afford. And our summer reading statistics, we just went up, we just doubled with children this year. We're a new library, so our statistics are a little different. But I just want to assure you that we are looking for funding in every way and that we do utilize, I'm sure you understand, we utilize every dollar that you guys give us. And, you know, I just wanted to let you know that we are really looking for other ways to enhance our services as well. We still do need the county money, but I just wanted to assure you that. Thank you.
A great comment, spoken like a true Gutenberger. go ahead, Martha, and then Frank.
You know, the OTR money looks like just so little. You're so mean, Joe. You didn't include it.
I'd rather not have the county administrator thrown under the bus.
Sorry. So I went to the Frank's question earlier about percentages. I went to the big book. So what's included is, do I understand, $164,800 for all of them combined?
No.
Wait a minute.
$154,500. 6.25%
cut. Okay. So what they got this year was 164.8, and what they would get under this budget is 154.5 altogether. Okay. Thank you.
Frank.
Yeah. Can you identify if you're also receiving money from a school district? Just four of you? Four of your libraries are? Thank you.
Okay.
Thanks.
If there are no... Mike.
I don't want to be Simon Legree, but I want to convey to our rural libraries that most of our departments also were asked to have a 6.25% cut, but they had to end up having to absorb more because there was a fringe amount in there that ended up being more like a between 10 and 12% cut. So I just wanted you to understand the context in which we're evaluating all these requests, if indeed your restorations are not granted. At some point, I'm not sure that I'm going to get a lot of traction on this. I wouldn't mind seeing just a basic grid of total budget, and then you know what the county portion of that is, total usage in terms of numbers of patrons, say, per year, and maybe total population, so we can just get a sense of proportion. I've always had a question since the days when there was an odd assortment of funding, and we evened it all up for ease, but the proportions seem to be way off. Some libraries have incredible use, and some, as Lansing is just doing started, and just to see how these dollars are leveraged, first of all, but then also the population that's served.
Thank you, Michael. If we were casting the role, you have a leg up on it right now, but we're not. At any rate, I've heard you say that before, and I think it's a genuine comment, and you know it's something that we should all think about. Let me just say, from my point of view, being a rural rep, that I appreciate the fact that all the work that you do in outside of the city of Ithaca and what you do for the people in your own specific areas. And if there's no other questions, we'll stop with that. Okay? Thank you. Up next is the Tompkins County Public Library, and I see many people here for that. And do you have a PowerPoint that you want to use?
No.
You're just going to. So all I would ask of you is tell me your name, first and last, for the record, and welcome to the 7:45 hour or 7:20 hour.
Good evening. I'm Janet Steiner. I'm the director of the Tompkins County Public Library. And with me tonight are Hank DeLay, the president of our board, and our treasurer, Megan Fawcett, is here, and our assistant library director, Rosemary Rice, is here. So thank you very much for the opportunity to update you on the library. I would like to echo what just happened here in the last half hour. The rural libraries are extraordinarily important to us as the central library for the Finger Lakes Library System, and they take the demand off of our library. And I'm going to tell you about the demand on our library, but if we didn't have the rural libraries out there serving those rural communities, it would be much harder for us to do our job. I did do a PowerPoint presentation in June, and that was at the pre-budget presentation. So I told you at that time about the increased usage of our library and how we are meeting our user expectations. We welcomed our 4 millionth and 1 visitor to our 101 East Green Street location. They were 9-year-old twins, Seth and Julian Ribeiro. And the Ribeiros regularly visit the library with their father, Alexandre. And the twins use the library in very different ways. One went directly into youth services, and the other one went into the black hole section in the adult department. Very different usage. We're able to meet both of their needs. And we also use this opportunity to thank all of our staff for the work that they've done in serving those 4 million people since 2000 when we opened, despite the fact that the library's workforce is decreasing. Today, we start with babies. Babies receive library cards. Toddlers attend story time. Kindergartners come to the library as part of the Kids Discover the Trail program. Middle schoolers are part of a teen advisory committee. High school and college students find not only homework resources, but also places of solitude and relaxation. Our public internet workstations are in demand, as you heard from the other libraries, in demand by all ages every hour that the library is open. And those that bring their own laptops take advantage of our library's wireless internet access. A grant project is underway to study the needs of our aging baby boomer population, that would be me, so that we can be prepared to offer relevant library services to this population. While our most senior generation relies on our library for help in using email, learning about the internet, and are taking advantage of our large print and audio books. We are experimenting this year with a Kindle, which is an electronic book reader from Amazon. We're redesigning our website. We're implementing a sustainability grant from the Park Foundation. And we're celebrating 10 years as one of the founding partners of the Discovery Trail. Compared to last year, and I'm going to echo the statistics that you heard from the rural libraries, our visitor door count is up by 8%. The number of registered borrowers is up by 3%. Reference inquiries up by 6%, circulation up by 10%, and attendance at public programming is booming with a 36% increase compared to last year. Lending of our library materials to other libraries in the Finger Lakes Library System went up 28% this year compared to last year, which addressed somebody's question about how Finger Lakes is being affected by this. And while we help citizens during rough times in their lives, people who are trying to learn English, people learning, looking for work, they're needing internet access, they're canceled their magazine and Netflix subscriptions, and they've cut back on buying books. Our library is open 6 days a week in the summer and 7 days a week in the winter. And we watch every morning as 40 to 50 people wait out in front of our library doors for those doors to open. And this is true every day of the week. There is no down day. And the shortened hours that we have on Sunday witness the heaviest usage per hour after Saturday. Unlike a profit-making venture, there's no financial reward in garnering new or more frequent customers. In our world, we make do with the resources that we have from both the public and the private sector, and we stretch them as far as we can. We have been living on austerity budgets for so long that when times get financially tougher, we are extremely limited in our options. In our 2010 budget projections, we are predicting a shortfall of almost 10% of our budget, $330,000. This is due to the following factors. The 6.2% decrease in our county appropriation leads the list. loss of a multi-year over-target request for a volunteer coordinator, decreases of 9% in all state-funded activities, a 6-9% decrease in sales tax revenue expectations, a 50% decrease in our interest earned on our reserve funds, coupled with a 30% increase in retirement liabilities and a 7% increase in health insurance costs and anticipated salary increases. So to reiterate, the gap between anticipated revenues and expenditures is $330,000. Now, we have taken the steps to close that gap by almost 50%, and I'm going to tell you what we have done so far in this year and what we plan to do in next year to reduce that deficit by $160,000. We are going to leave and have left vacant 4 part-time clerical and page positions for 2009 and 2010, and you will already see the negative impact of that decision as backlogs are building both in the check-in and the reshelving process. Number 2, we are reducing our workforce through voluntary reductions in work schedules. 3 people have taken advantage of that offer. The impact of that action is that other staff members will be adding to their own workload. Number 3, we have reduced the unrestricted portion of our acquisitions budget, that is what we use to purchase library materials like books and AV materials, both for this year and for next year. The negative impact of that action is that fewer items will be purchased and there will be longer waits for those books that are most in demand. We are reducing our staff development and training budget both this year and next year. We promise users that we will have a well-trained and up-to-date staff, and this is especially important as technology changes occur on a regular basis. So the action will clearly affect our goal of delivering on that promise. We are reducing our unrestricted publicity and outreach budget. The negative impact of that action is that we will quickly revert to serving only those who already know about the value and importance of the services of our library, and efforts to reach out to those who need us the most are virtually eliminated. Number 6, we are reducing our technology support services by 7 hours for 2010. This action and all the actions that I've just described painfully cut into core operations. Reducing technical support from 42 hours per week to 35 hours per week may seem inconsequential, but in fact, the standard level of technical support for an organization of our size is 70 hours per week. Taking these steps, as unenviable as they are, narrows the gap by $160,000, which is almost half. We have therefore submitted to you 2 over-target requests for the balance, totaling $170,000, which would allow the library to continue to remain open 7 days a week, continue to provide core services to our users, and operate the library, but with a reduced workforce. 1 over-target request of $16,000 would retain the volunteer coordinator as a full-time position, and we are extremely grateful that the county administrator supports this OTR, that is in the draft budget. Volunteers are an essential component of our library workforce. We rely on volunteers, some short time, some long term, to assist our staff in every area of the library. Our other OTR, aptly named Maintenance of Effort, for $154,000, would forestall further reductions in our workforce, or more accurately, forestall layoffs. The county administrator has recommended that a fraction of this request be funded at $19,000. We are grateful for this support, since taken with the funding for the volunteer coordinator will help ensure, but not necessarily guarantee, that we meet the New York State maintenance of effort requirements, and furthermore helps ensure that state funding for the Finger Lakes Library System is not unduly jeopardized by one municipality. Nonetheless, we remain with a gaping hole in our budget. We will make some adjustments to our minimal unreserved fund balance, but at this time, with no other options open to us, we will unfortunately and most regrettably believe that we will need to commence layoffs beginning in January of 2010. These are workforce reductions in addition to what we have already done. So I'd be happy to take any of your questions. Thank you.
Frank, and then Will.
Thanks, Janet, I think. And by the way, the presentation that you made to us earlier this year, was well done as well. A couple of years back, when all the construction was going on in downtown Ithaca, there was a concern raised about the reliance of TCPL on the rural libraries to help absorb some of the traffic, the foot traffic, that could not be accommodated by the by downtown. You know, they were building the parking garage and they were doing some other things downtown. There's still a lot of construction going on. The upswing that you've seen in usage, have you heard anything anecdotally? Because we used to get that report that were comments by patrons. Mm-hmm. Have you seen anything that's attributable to that type of thing with all the construction going on, that people can't get to one or the other of the libraries they normally would use, and that your facilities being used substantially more now?
Are you suggesting there's more usage of the rural libraries because people can't use our library?
Perhaps.
Is that what your question is?
I mean, is there any shift in any of it that you've been aware of?
Well, when I think about our location at the corner of Green and Cayuga Street, I can list almost every other year construction project either next to us, behind us, across the street from us,
yeah.
A repavement, a repaving of a street. I think our users have been enormously adaptable at being and creative at being able to live with what appears to be constant construction projects around the library. The only anecdotal information I can give you is that there are people who don't have a disabled handicap sticker, but are just really not mobile and dislike parking in the garage and having to walk to the library. So people would like to have a library that, just like I call it the mini mart mentality, they would love to have a library downtown just like they have in the rural libraries. You drive right up to the front door, you get out, you walk three steps, and you're in the library. And for some people, no matter whether it's the library, the bank, or anything downtown, it's just difficult to get there. So that would be those people we offer Finger Lakes Library System mail-it services. They can't get to the library.
Will?
Thank you. We've talked with the rural libraries about the critical importance of access to computers, and something that was not mentioned but I learned about recently was that there is a new effort through the Department of Social Services to make application process for food stamps online, and I suspect you'll be getting many more people wanting to use the computers in that way. It seems insane to me to be cutting in this year, but I understand, you understand, I'm sure, the hard situation we're in. Please talk to us a little more, Janet, about the maintenance of effort requirements from the state, how close we are to that, and, mm-hmm. and how they work.
Well, I spent quite a lot of time in the OTR explaining maintenance of effort, perhaps overly detailed, but I wanted you to know that there is an expectation by the state of New York that municipalities continue to support their library, and the ratio, the formula is 95% of the average of the last 2 years. What the county administrator has done is put sufficient funding into our over-target request to be able to meet that requirement. So there's a $35,000 number is exactly the number that we would need from the county in order not to jeopardize that penalty. If we didn't meet that maintenance of effort, we would lose some state funding. So it's a good thing that, I mean, it really is a very positive thing for us that we won't have to worry about that for the most part.
Martha.
Thank you. I guess I thought you wouldn't be here by now, Janet. Didn't you? You thought you'd retired early enough that somebody else would be standing here. But anyway, so I guess with a little bit of, you know, this is the last one anyway, right? So just thank you for you know, a great run and, you know, a fantastic facility that we're all proud of and we wish we could fund more generously. I want to ask you about the Sunday hours and also about requests to towns in the city.
Yes. I'm glad you raised Sunday hours. This year, the county put $20,000 into our permanent budget for Sunday hours. That's one-third of the cost, roughly. And the other two-thirds, another third came from the town of Ithaca, and the third came from a donor. So we are fully funded for Sundays for 2009. We made a deliberate decision not to eliminate that $20,000. When we looked at the cuts from the county, we said we're going to protect the $20,000 for Sunday hours because we're going to use that to leverage the town again. We're going to say to the town, we've kept the county money in our budget. Would you renew your commitment? And we've also asked the Friends of the Library to be that third. So we are hoping to sustain Sunday hours in 2010 because our commitment is not to hurt our users and because the families and children and students who use the library on Sundays really want us to be open. So we are doing everything we can not to cut Sunday hours or not to make it a funding issue for you. And
okay,
so we are going to the town of Ithaca, that was your question, we are going to come back and ask for a renewal of that.
Okay, and then?
And the third from the Friends has been requested, but they have not given us their decision yet.
Okay. Mike.
Has there been analysis throughout the week of your highs and your lows? I'm sure there probably has been in terms of demand, in terms of usage. And is it possible to consider, I know it involves union negotiations, but reallocating the hours so that, you know, maybe half of Tuesday and half of Thursday you'd be closed, but you'd be open more on Saturdays and Sundays. Mm-hmm. I know that's a very tricky and complicated analysis, but also to implement. But I wondered where you are on that thinking.
When we look at our library usage, and you can look at circulation and door count and kind of track usage. You can find an hour here or an hour there where perhaps usage is lower, but you don't find large blocks of time where it makes any sense at all to close because the usage is so heavy throughout all 7 days. So I'm not sure what we'd be accomplishing by your scenario of closing. You're closing to the public, which means that you have six people who have to be on duty during those hours when you're closed, but you still have all your back house operations and all your back of house costs. So the savings are very small when you look at what you're achieving by, unless you close the library for an entire day, shut it down, turn off the utilities, and work on some very creative schedule of 4-day work weeks, which of course involves collective bargaining. And
I was just simply referring to, you said Sundays is the second busiest day compared to Saturdays.
Right.
Mm-hmm. But most of your hours are weekday hours. I mean, so mm-hmm. it just seems like the demand is not necessarily being met by the hours you're open, especially if you factor in summer hours, you're only open 6 days, which for me is a bit counterintuitive, but I also know the demand is high in winter. But it just strikes me that year-round and also throughout the week, trying to meet and maybe the public shifts their time they stop by based on your hours, but it seems like you could actually meet demand more fully by shifting those out.
We have exactly the same goal that you do, is to extend weekend hours, but it is an issue in our collective bargaining agreements where there's a limit on when staff can be required to work, and we have been inching forward on that hour by hour to try to add hours on the weekends, and we've been successful with one contract and not the other. But we do share your goal, and certainly being open later Friday nights and Saturday nights, which is where the demand seems to be, would be highly desirable. I would agree with you on that.
Carolyn Dooley.
I have a follow-on to Will's question about the maintenance of effort.
Okay.
As I understand the county administrator's recommendation, you will manage to, under his recommended budget, maintain effort that is required to get the state funding?
Assuming the town of Ithaca renews its gift and assuming sales tax doesn't drop much below our expectations. So all three of those sources of revenue are considered local support and they're all added together. So that's how the formula is derived from not just county funding, but from all three sources added together. So what the county has done is put forward enough so that if the other two sources don't drop, we'll be okay. But that's why I said it's not guaranteed yet, and we really won't know until the end of 2010, particularly with sales tax.
So that was my next question, was how does the process work? How would you know if sales tax have met the...
Well, the maintenance of effort process is determined actually in would be in 2010. At the end of the year, you report to the state how much local support you received. And when the report goes to Albany in 2011, they will look and do the calculations. And that's when we'll be told whether we met maintenance of effort requirements or not. So there's an actual, at the end of the year, when you report exactly how much you received, that's when it's the true maintenance of effort numbers would be revealed.
Okay. And not to further, in any way, suggest that we further reduce your budget, but when we met at the library, we talked about whether the whether you were counting or somehow could count full credit for the facilities maintenance that the county pulled out and provides else in another way to apply towards the maintenance of effort.
It doesn't help, Carol, because you have to add it in both years. So it's the same, it's a wash.
Right.
So if you're talking about maintenance of effort, you're saying, well, what the county facilities gave us last year and what they gave us this year has to be 95% of the average. So it's not, you can't add it in one year and not compare it to a similar year. So it helps, that number helps you if you're doing per capita comparisons and you're trying to make sure that you're putting all of your revenue out and comparing yourself to other libraries and making sure that all the county support's accounted for. That's when you want to be sure that you're comparing apples and apples. But in this case, it doesn't help you. And also, technically, it's not in our budget. So when we're reporting to the state, it doesn't show up as a revenue. Okay.
Don't look.
I should have asked Karen this question, but I'll ask you instead, Janet. In your budget book pages, you refer to the fact that Finger Lakes Library System, as well as its member libraries, have to meet this maintenance of effort test. Does that mean that the small amount that Karen has asked for should be considered in the same way as your maintenance of effort request?
The Finger Lakes Library System reports an aggregate of local support from all libraries. So one small library could show a reduction, and another small library could show an increase, and it might wash out for her and what she has to show the state. But because our portion of that is so large that we have an immediate and dramatic impact on her ability to show that the member libraries are also meeting maintenance of effort, and that's why it was referred to. And sure, Karen could have can explain it in much more detail, but I think that's a simple answer. Okay.
Hearing no other questions, thank you very much. Janet, board members, for attending, and we have one more. Mike, go
ahead. This is an overall question. It happens every year. As we go through these presentations, we make notes. We may talk to each other in the hallways. But it's very, very useful for administration and department heads to, if we are thinking of making proposals, to begin to tell you, to begin to tell Norma, so we can begin to make a sequence of suggested ideas for the voting meetings. Now, this voting meetings are 7 meetings away, so it's not, but this is a very good time, if you're finishing 15 minutes early, for us to kind of convert our little notes, our little ideas in the back of our head into, do I want to make any change to this budget, increase, decrease, et cetera, and not lose that. Because 6 weeks from now, you may go back over again. What did I mean by that number? What did I mean by that question mark or whatever? Just, I would say, capture it, let Jim know, let others know, so that some of these might get converted into action items.
Thank you for that, Mike. And Nathan, as a former chair, do you have anything you want to add?
Okay. Not this time.
All right.
Good answer.
Well,
I want to thank you once again for arranging for the pizza. I was wondering if you want to talk about maybe...
Yeah, I was going to do that, but I wanted to wait for the room to clear. It's an executive session, what we're going to eat. No, it's not. No. What Will is asking about, we have tomorrow, the 14th, the 22nd, the 29th, and the 30th, all evening, 5 o'clock meetings, and if you all want to have some snack or something, my sense is we need to kick in some cash and between Kathy and me, if you would let us know what you want. Like, I've already heard one no vote for pizza. That's okay. I don't mind that. I don't take it too personally. But if you have some things you want us to pick up, give me some cash, and we'll try to get what you want. All right? And I'm suggesting $25, and that might get us through for a while. Anyone want to make any comments? Yeah.
I heard Kevin say we are supposed to get those PowerPoints printed up.
I'll have them to you tomorrow.
So are we? Do we think we'll be getting them ahead of?
You will get them as need. Tomorrow's supposed to be the presentation. You'll get those.